Hello and welcome to the Next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name's Kevin Appleby. Well, Graham, I was researching our guest and went across to have a look at her website. And I know, I don't normally do any research. It's normally you that does the well, I don't think you do any research either.
Oh, I do loads. I do loads.
But now, I was looking at our guest's website. And you know, that idea of the landing page, where you can only do one thing, I think our guest this week has put something together that is really impressive and really takes that to the next level.
Yeah, her name is Pia Silver, and she's a charming young lady, and she comes all the way from New York. Pia, welcome to the Next 100 Days podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you are welcome. And we love your website. Do you know, there's a little thing about no BS. I mean, it's a Dan Kennedy thing, as you probably know, and basically other people use it as well. But what they don't know is that my postcode is 0BS. Now, I couldn't have bought that.
That is a little known fact about Graham Arrowsmith.
No, it's I don't. So
I hope there are some numbers and letters after that.
Well, there's some symbols before that, but okay. But no, it finishes at 0BS. But no, that's a little known thing. So anyway, Pia, tell us, what do you do during the day that kind of interests you?
During the day, I coach small branding agencies on how to scale up their profit and their freedom while without employees, without building a huge business. So how do you make more money in less time with more fun?
Wow.
Oh, that sounds good to me. I'm all for doing more, doing more in less time and having fun doing it and working out how to have fun in the time that you've saved.
My guess, though, Kevin, is that Pia's idea of fun and yours are probably a little bit different. I don't know.
Probably, yes.
What's your idea of fun?
But Kevin, well, I mean, you tell me. What's your idea?
You call them in the United States model railroads. Yeah. So I'd want to be off in the hobby room doing stuff there instead of doing boring work stuff. Which is great for your mental health because it's all about being creative.
Yeah, I suppose if you're a small branding agency, what does that actually mean? It just means that you've got a really passionate owner, maybe with a couple of staff, maybe not, maybe no staff whatsoever, but they want to grow. So they find you. And what is it about when they sort of turn up on your door? What do they say?
Yeah, so for the most part, they find me and they are attracted to me because I say I can help you build your business without building a whole team. And people who want to work with me tend to be creatives who enjoy the work. They love working with great clients. They wish they had more of the great clients, and they aren't looking to build a bigger and bigger business where they become managers of other people doing the work. Mm-hmm. They want to do the work themselves. They just want to get paid better for it, and they want to run their business with more ease. So that is, there are quite a few things that have to fall into place for that to work when you stay small, and that's what I teach.
Wow. So, okay, you've got a client. Well, let's start with the people you're talking to. They basically got their skill set, am I right, working for others?
Yes, they usually learned how to do this working for an agency. And the big mistake that is understandable that they make is that when they go out on their own, they mimic the agency that they worked with, and they run the business as like a small version of the big agency. And that, in my experience, is the fast track to burnout and being overworked and underpaid.
Yeah. And doesn't that get you doing all things for everybody rather than the particular niche things that you're good at?
That's definitely one issue that people come to us with. Out of a scarcity mindset, they feel like they need to be able to work with anybody and deliver anything. And that's also a very fast way to get burnt out because you're constantly reinventing the wheel for every single client because everything is a little bit different. And you can't really build expertise when you're always changing what you're doing and for whom.
If you're an agency master, which it says on your website, I'm thinking, is this, I don't know my photography, but is that sort of a Jean Shrimpton look? I'm thinking, if you don't know who she is, I think you Google Hacks. Jean Shrimpton, then I'm thinking back in the 60s. I think there's a certain look about her.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know. I get it. I get it.
Thank
it's
you.
Just how you hold your head. It's the way you hold your head. And look, we're going to, I'll tell you what, for those people listening, go straight to piasilva.com. So that's PIASILVA.com. And tell me I'm wrong. I'm seeing something in your life. You probably don't even know she is. It's before your time. But the point is, for me, you come across as an agency master on that, in that shot. So they're looking at you thinking, oh, she knows. Therefore, I better listen to her. So what is it that you would, all right, you sit down together. Is it a coffee shop? You just bring them around to your place. What do you do? Do you go around to their place?
Oh, how I actually teach them or how I deliver. So I have two businesses. One is my agency, Worst of All Design. That's where I actually work with clients, build their entire brand and website. And I built this intensive no BS model in that agency with my partner and husband. I now have a second business called the No BS Agency Mastery Program, where I teach that model that I wrote about in my book and built in my agency. And I do that in an online training and coaching platform.
Right. So it's an online service delivery. Okay.
Yes.
So basically then they'll turn up, and is it a bit like a membership thing where you kind of go through one thing after another, but surely they crave time with you, don't they?
Yes. I don't call it a membership because it really is at least a 1 year engagement. To transform your business, you need to work on it for many years, let's be honest. But there is a whole methodology and model that we train them through, and there is a lot of live support. So the people who show up and ask for it, I mean, I'm talking to them about their businesses every Monday.
Right. Okay. So basically then you'll have that one-on-one liaison. And there are literally dozens, because it's a big city, isn't it? I mean, you've probably got a lot of small branding agencies.
Oh, my clients are actually from all over the world. In fact, we just had an in-person retreat in Brooklyn, and we had people flying in from the UK and Canada and Ireland. Yeah, all over the place.
And Ireland. Oh my, I see. They'd have been fun.
They're spreading the no BS gospel to Ireland.
Yeah. So they come along, and it's a whole bunch of fun. They're not competing necessarily with each other, but they're all looking for a little bit more of a taste of these bigger clients. But they've probably got something in front of them that's stopping them. What is it?
Yeah, I want to clarify, they do want bigger clients. They would say that too. But I think what they really want is clients that pay them profitably. And one of the first things I show them is that higher paying clients are not necessarily profitable clients. Yeah. So understanding that we're looking for a profitability that gives us the business and life we want, not necessarily a top line revenue that has us working like crazy to deliver.
You consider me told, Pia. Thank you. What do I know?
It's important. It's an important distinction, because they come and they want those bigger clients. And the first thing they need to understand is, well, let's figure out what your actual goals are. And then let's find the clientele that you have the experience to work with at that expert level right now. And then let's build your skills so they can get even more advanced.
So it might not be a JP Morgan, but it might be a kind of a small regional thing retailer or manufacturer or whatever that is wholly dependent on your skills. Is that more?
My agency focuses on 1-3 person service businesses. So I charge $40,000 for a 2-day entire branding project, and it's usually a solopreneur that hires me.
Wow. But that must mean that if they've got anything about them, they'll want at least 80,000 back, won't they? So they'll want a 2-for-1. They're probably going to get a lot more than that, or are they?
Once you're at the level that my clients are at, any tweak into the pricing or ability to close just another couple of sales is going to dwarf the investment with us. So, that was different 10 years ago when I was charging $3,000 for a 1 day and $5,000 for a two day. Those were smaller clients, and it was a slightly different tweak. So over the years, I've obviously increased my skills and my ability to deliver, and the projects have grown. But it's this process that I teach can work for branding clients, branding agencies at any level.
Is a branding agency any different from a marketing agency?
Absolutely. But there's a lot of crossover, and most people don't understand what branding agency is. It's actually a frustration of mine as well, because there's not like one term that completely describes the people that I work with. So when I say branding, I mean somebody who is helping strategize the messaging and the design of what the business is putting out there. And that usually is delivered in the packaging of the messaging and the copy, the logo and the website and the materials. And then when I think of a marketing agency, marketing agencies also deliver branding, because you can't do marketing. You can't do good marketing that's effective without a really good brand. So a lot of marketing agencies kind of add the branding on because they just know they can't deliver if they don't have a good brand to work with. But marketing agencies, I think of as a company that is working ongoing with a client, helping them put their materials out there on an ongoing basis to bring clientele in. And while some of my students that I teach also offer that as a service, they often also learn that once they master the project-based offers that I teach, they don't really want to work with ongoing clients anymore, because their lifestyle is so much better when they just do these high-ticket, high-profit project-based branding projects, and then that's it.
I see. Okay, so you're teaching them a different business model then. They come along
very
with their business, and then you say, no, you don't want to be. You want to be doing more Gene Shrimpton rather than this thing that you're doing. So is it they say, oh, okay. And that's the reason they turn up, because they know that's what they're going to get as part of the course.
You know, they turn up because they don't know what to do. They're working way too hard, and they don't know how to manage these projects. I talk a lot about getting rid of the BS of ongoing branding projects or you know, website projects that takes, I mean, have you guys been involved in a website project? They can take months. They can be a real headache. They're an energy drain. By the end of it, everyone just wants it to be done. And there's just such a better way to do it. And it really starts with the agency owner having full clarity about the process and being able to lead that process with confidence, so that the client can kind of relax into it, follow their lead. And I mean, that's, you know, I charge $40,000 for these entire brands and websites. We do the project before those 2 days. We're not doing it on the 2 days. But my clients are so happy to show up for 2 days and be done and be so happy with the results. They don't want this to take 6 months. They are ecstatic that it goes live at 6 p.m. and, you know, that's it.
But can't clients be really stupid as well? Because basically, if you take the Jaguar people who really messed up their brand by all about people who never buy their cars. I mean, I find as a marketer, I just, you know, whether it's brand or not, they really messed up their brand. It'll recover, but basically they've probably put a big hole into their 10-year horizon income. And for me, somebody's guilty. So somebody sold them a dream, which is complete BS. Do you agree? You must have an idea of what happened there. But basically, do you agree that that can be the result? That, you know, maybe you're pitching something that's, it didn't work.
I think that it is probably a result of design by committee and the wrong people being in the room fighting for their side, and maybe it getting watered down to something that everybody can agree on. And when you are attractive to everyone, you're attractive to no one. And I mean, it's one of the reasons why I focused on 1-3 person service businesses, because yeah. I want to work with the decision maker or the two decision makers. And we need to go full force into a strategy that they are very bought into. And I find, at least for the small businesses, you know, small businesses are a little different than a huge corporation that's trying to get market share. Small businesses, there's enough clients for any small business in this world. There's what, 8 billion people now, almost 9 billion people on this earth. So we just need to call out and attract our ideal clients. And the stronger our message is, the more we can repel some people to attract others, the easier it will be to build our businesses.
You know, I know Kevin probably wanted to ask this question because it's about pricing and money. But, you know, one of the things that goes hand in glove with, well, A, your pricing, but B, their pricing. Do you say to them, I know that you're pricing this at 10, but you should be pricing it at 20?
You know, that's a great question. And I feel like I have a slightly different answer than most. I don't think that branding and websites and the deliverables actually have inherent value without the delivery process. Yeah. So I think that a project is worth what a person who is selling it believes that it's worth and can confidently sell it for. And I never suggest that people double their price, because if they don't have the confidence in that price, they'll never sell it. So instead, I teach my students to validate pricing in the real world by selling something. Sell, raise. You could sell, raise. Yeah. Indefinitely, but that's how you build pricing confidence. And that's how I didn't get to $40,000 from five overnight. It was five, and then the next month it was six, and then the next month it was seven. And I, you know, at a certain point it was 15, and then it was 20, and then it was 25, but I just kept adding it. And so, I mean, 40 rolls off the tongue because I've validated it so many times.
It's a good number. And I like the way in which you've done it. I mean, there are other people who just say, look, the value of this in the market is this, and therefore you are mispriced. But
if nobody will pay you that, then it doesn't matter.
Well, no, but if people will pay you that, because the value is recognized, that's a good reason for changing your price. But sorry, Kevin,
I think there's another angle to the pricing thing. There's that, what do you feel you're worth? But there's also, what market is your client operating in? Mm-hmm. If they are in a high margin, high profit area themselves, well, fine. They're probably not going to think too much of $40,000 because it'll bring the business in that's likely to pay fees in that same sort of ballpark. If you're looking at an agency that's dealing with maybe non-profits and so on, where the fee level might be a lot lower, well, that sort of high ticket price doesn't work.
Well, that's another reason that you want to validate it in the market, right? So it's the best way to figure out what the market will bear is to try to sell it.
Yeah, no, the book on the shelf there from, I think it was Pat Flynn, Kevin, we used to follow him a bit, and he talks about validation. But I get that. Your ideal, I work with a guy called Flint McGough, and we use something called MechLabs AI, and he has the MechLabs methodology, and he's been around conversion for God knows how many years. He's about my age, a bit younger, and basically he has a methodology. One of the things about Flint, and I'm losing my chain of thought here, but basically the thing about Flint is he's all about having sort of like a method of how you can actually move from. He's all about getting to understanding why people say yes. So when it comes to a brand, when it comes to creating a brand, one of the things that you've got to do is to find those people who are going to say yes, and you've got to take them through a mental sort of process. Because isn't a brand a lived experience? So effectively, if you're going to sort of get them from don't know who you are, got the awareness, maybe the engagement, and then you've kind of got your value proposition, and then you've got an offer, and hey, all of that kind of is steeped in this, I would say your value proposition is largely your brand anyway, but basically that for me is where at the end of that process, they're going to more likely to say yes than no, or yes than, or maybe no. And that type of philosophy or that type of work that you do with your clients, is that the type of work? You might do it in a different way, but is that the type of detailed work that you might do?
Yes, but I think, yes, and I think that description can be a little hard for small businesses and also small branding agencies to bring down into a tactical place. So, for example, I interact with a lot of small branding agencies, like I mentioned earlier, who are replicating the process that the big agency they worked at delivered. So they're talking to their small business clients about their core values and their mission statement and their, and all these back, and the small businesses don't know what to do with any of this. And so, you know, I can be a little flippant about this, but I'm like, listen, your small business needs clients. They need to resonate with the people who are talking to them. And we need to focus on the parts that are actually going to move the needle. And I'm not saying that those things aren't important, but they're a little, I think they're just a little in the sky for a lot of small businesses. So when I think of it more as, I mean, small businesses don't often even truly understand what a brand is going to be or do for them. They don't even want to pay for it. They just want marketing because they forget the brand. Can we just get the clients in, right? Which is kind of funny. So what I teach is that we need to give our clients an experience of what a brand is without having to explain to them what it is. And the first step in my process and what I teach is that they actually buy a small engagement where we interview them and we show them exactly how to get from A to B. And that journey, all the things they need to do to change about their marketing, their business, their website, whatever, all of that is encompassed in their brand, but we don't necessarily need to say, your brand is this and your brand is that. We're just giving them the details that they can really, you know, wrap their arms around. Does that make sense?
Kevin?
Yeah. And I'm thinking of brand is, it's very, very important. Now, for big corporates, yes, you're going to have mission, vision, and all those things, which I just look at as big corporate BS. They don't really matter quite as much to a small business, but you do have to ask some questions like, what does this business stand for? What are we all about? And for example, business that I'm involved in, we went through some debates recently about webinars and what should a webinar be, particularly as we're working with tech partners and often the tech partners sponsoring a webinar. And they obviously are sponsoring because they want to sell stuff. We're doing a webinar because we want to teach people stuff. So we had a real debate about this and said, no, our brand is about putting on learning events. It's not a sales webinar. It's our masterclass. Now, to me, brand is about being absolutely clear on what is it that we do, but actually being even more clear about what is it that we don't do.
I love that you just said that. So my favorite question that I ask people in this interview, it's one of the first questions, because you said, what do you stand for? And if you ask a bunch of businesses, what do you stand for? They're usually going to give you some pretty generic answers.
Yeah, that's probably
so. Yeah. So the trick that I use is I say, forget what do you stand for? What do you stand against? What do you hate about this industry? What do you wish never existed? What are you trying to do opposite of? And I find when you ask that question, people get really energized and excited to bash all the things that they don't like in their industry. And that's a great way to figure out what they actually do stand for, so that their answer isn't, you know, I stand for honesty and integrity and, you know, good values.
If I go and look at professional services websites, say CPAs, things like that, they all have that general, you know, we stand for these things. And to which I say, so what?
No? Right.
Every website in your niche that I look at says the same stuff. Now, tell me on your website, why should I choose you over Fred down the street? What is special about you? And that's what brand to me is all about.
Well, I would say that's what a value proposition is all about. Because the phrase that you would use for a value proposition is, why should I do business with you rather than any other competitors available to me, including me doing nothing? So basically, if you can answer that, then basically you've kind of got your value proposition, what you're exclusive compared to your competitors. So if you kind of looked out your door and you said, well, I don't know what a small business you would deal with, but basically there's probably a few of them around them, especially in a big city like New York. It's not just New York, but, you know, especially around them. Then you would say, well, what do I do that they don't? So what are your exclusive factors? So that, for me, I think there's a kind of marriage somewhere. The bit I'm probably more of the kind of more sort of almost sequence of thought, very clear focus on what you're delivering, and I think there's something more, something else that this brand thing that you're doing is creating. I think all the things that I do day in, day out, and that is described by this methodology, are correct. But I do think that but you offer something different. It's almost like I hate to use it, a holistic thing, but there's almost like an umbrella that kind of is almost like the magnetic force that potentially drags them to you in some way, or the experience that you're delivering is they take that away and talk to other people about. And I think that there's something in that, but I've never really been able to nail it. So Pia, can you try and nail branding for me?
I mean, the definition that I've always liked most is what people say about you when you're not in the room. I mean, I think that that's a really good description because it leaves it kind of vague too. Well, okay, you've got all this stuff going on, but when you're not here, what is the thing that comes out of people's mouths, right? Why would they think of you and suggest you to somebody else? And, you know, I wrote a book called Badass Your Brand, and my Worst of All Design agency says Badass Brands without the BS on it. That is our brand. But so I always defined branding as having two characteristics, because it was specifically for my badass brands. A badass brand magnetically attracts and repels everyone else. So it has to have that push-pull, and it has to be able to charge more than the competition and still win the business. And so if you check those two categories, you are a badass brand, but it takes a lot to be able to do those two things. And a lot of it has to do with what you're talking about, having a really clear reason why you are in a category of one, why you are the apple in a basket of oranges.
If I didn't know better, I would say that Dan Kennedy is your uncle. I mean, I think he's basically, I think you've studied Dan Kennedy.
I've actually never read his books, and I had to decide whether or not I was going to own this no BS thing, knowing that he had owned it for so many years. I had Badass Brands Without the BS on our homepage of our agency website for years, for about 10 years before I was starting this new business. And I went through all kinds of names, and one day I looked at our existing website, and I said, you know what, that's it. And it's not just the way some people will use badass or no BS. It's not just a fun way to say something. We truly, getting rid of the BS in every aspect of the process is what we teach. So I'm going to go with it.
No, I think you should. And actually, I think it's a brilliant way of doing it. And you know, I have a lot of time for Dan Kennedy, but you know, I also have a lot of time for Flint, because that description of the question you ask yourself when you're trying to figure out a value proposition. Flint was one who came up with it, but I think that Dan stole it. I think Dan not stole, adapted it, and basically, you know, shameless.
Yeah. It comes down to there's nothing new under the sun.
No, but because oddly enough, Flint's credited with it. So basically, then it came up in Dan's work, and I was thinking, because I quoted this back to Flint, and you know, so anyway, the point is, the beauty is, I like both chaps, and I really do like the message. But you naturally, even though you haven't read the book, you speak to those same sort of issues from a brand point of view.
I would think that anybody who studies and does in the real world this kind of work will land here. I mean, it's how it works. I mean, I don't think I've discovered it or it's new. It's just kind of like, this is where the path leads.
I think if I was a small branding agent, I absolutely would want to come and join you in Brooklyn in some coffee shop. And you tell me, you charge me 40 grand. And then basically you tell me, I go away knowing I'm going to double, triple, whatever it is. Because I'm not doing the things that you're doing. I mean, I love your kind of energy and your passion, And I would think that that is like 70% of why you're successful.
I would say that that's what I was saying before about the work itself only being a piece of the value. I think so much of the value is actually the client's buy-in and their belief in the person leading the project and their confidence, so that the client, when they finish, are able to fully embrace and put their brand out there with as much energy and gusto as they can muster up. And I find that a reason a lot of brands fail is simply because the owner is wishy-washy on the end result, is not so confident to put it, is not excited to put it out. And that shows. And that might be because it didn't really nail it and it wasn't quite what it was supposed to be as well. But I just think there's a lot of things at play when it comes to a brand. A brand is kind of a nebulous thing, and it is important.
I'm just thinking, given your experience with your kind of I'm doing it brand agent, I forgot what you called yourself, but basically the badass agency. Worst of All Design, which that's clearly a good title, and obviously nobody wants to hire you because of it. But basically,
it's exactly why they want to hire us.
No, I know. It's all psychology, isn't it? But okay, so basically, then I'm thinking you're now thinking back through all the clients that you've handled in the last few years, and you're saying, this is the one that I really enjoy. I know I love them all, but basically, this one really got my engines going. What was it?
Okay, so it's actually the last one that I did. And it's because it's a very special brand to me. So it actually was the first brand that we did in our new intensives model in 2014. It's a company called Stash Wealth, and it's a financial advisory firm now repositioned for ambitious 30-somethings. In 2014, it was counter to all the financial firms out there. And most of my job back in 2014, when we made the brand the first time around, was just to get the owner on board with, you can say, get your financial shit together. You can say that. And I remember when I told her that, and her mentor at Merrill Lynch told her, you can't say that in this industry. And I said, that's exactly why you're gonna say it, because this is you being counter to the prevailing branding and messaging. Well, of course, now here we are over 10 years later. And I mean, that's no thing. Everybody has embraced this more, frankly, like crass way of speaking in all industries, including professional services. So this was our chance to rebrand it in a more, even more sophisticated and still edgy and cool positioning.
So if everybody's become edgy and cool and crass, then maybe the next time you're going to say, wear a tie and be very polite.
I absolutely. I mean, badass your brand. When I started saying badass brands in 2013, I remember going to the local chamber of commerce and speaking on stage, and somebody came up to me after and said, and that was really inappropriate. Or they said it to somebody else. Somebody came up to me and said, somebody in the audience said to me, she really shouldn't be saying that. And this person who told me said, that's exactly what she's talking about, is that it's standing out. It's getting a reaction. Of course, that sounds silly right now. That sounds quaint right now. I abandoned using badass brand. I wrote my book in 2017. Soon after that, badass this, badass that everywhere. I said, I had the trademark. I said, forget it. I'm moving on, because everybody is using this and they're truly watering down the meaning of it. So that's okay. Like, that served its purpose for me, and I am on to no BS mastery.
So then I guess at some stage that's going to sort of wade a little bit, and then you're going to have to come up with something. Kevin's the creative around here. I mean, I know you're right, but I mean, Kevin, what would you say the next iteration is going to be for Pia?
Oh, I don't know. I've not got that particular crystal ball, but it really is interesting there that you have to keep reinventing yourself. No, two reasons. Reason number one is that what you've been saying that used to stand out, everybody's now saying, so it doesn't stand out anymore, which is a badass thing. But the other thing, the interesting example from the financial services company is that, you know, they were trying to stand out and be opposite to the market. Now they've found a particular niche, is the 30-something. Okay. So now we've found this niche, let's rebrand all the way around that. And I've gone through some of that. Now, as a business evolves, different things come out. And as Grow CFO grew, we thought we were going to be talking to CFOs. Then we found a whole bunch of people who were what we now call the future CFOs that have this problem of, okay, how do I get to that number one role in finance that's called a CFO? So then a whole load of branding had to be put together that was specific to those people and their problems and what appealed to them, which is very different from that existing community. So you've got to evolve the brand all the time.
I just want to say that the most exciting way to rebrand is to look at, wow, what new information have we gathered? And wow, there's this whole market that we actually love serving. They're our best clients. We can give them the most value. I mean, that's the conversation we had. Why wouldn't we say this is who we specialize in? They have a very specific set of needs and desires. They're at a very specific point in their life. Why wouldn't we triple down on being experts at this so that when you're exactly this demographic, you're in your 30s, you're ambitious, you haven't figured this part of your life out, but everything else about your life is going pretty well, you look at this financial advisory firm and go, yeah, I mean, there's no one else speaking directly to me besides this. And I think that's a very badass thing to do.
And you seeded that thought and you've helped them create this positioning in the market now so that many more 30-year-olds and probably they'll be 40-somethings now, though, won't they? But basically, they came along because of that. Now, that's a heck of a case study. Yeah. So many little bits in it as well. Because it was, you know, there's the initial buy-in. There's possibly an inclination, but maybe not, oh, goodness, you know, give me the permission to do it. I mean, that's what a lot of wealthy people have. They've got all the money, but sometimes somebody's got to give them the permission to spend. It's really quite weird, but that happens so often. And I just wonder if so many leaders of companies, because of the people who've been around them in their career to date, they come equipped with, I don't know, what do you call it? A set of views that are being created by corporate. Now, look, Pia, if you had to go back into corporate now, how many days, maybe hours, would it be before they fired you?
Graham, I'm never in corporate. No, I never worked at a branding agent. I've never worked anywhere.
Oh, right. Okay, I get you. Well, no, because everything's fun for you, isn't it?
I founded the gig economy 20 yeah. years ago.
All right. No, but do you see what, for me to go back to corporate?
Yes.
When you're running your own business, you become unemployable.
I was unemployable from the beginning. I bartended. That was the only employed business.
I bet you
that
got fired from it.
I was a very good bartender.
Oh, you're really good.
I loved bartending. I mean, I'm a service person, right? So I loved talking to people and doing things really fast. I was a really fast bartender, and I just used those skills in a branding agency.
You know those apps on videos. You can press it and it goes from 1 to 1.2. Why is
1.
It that New Yorkers
2.
Are always 1.5?
2.5.
Yeah, New Yorkers are on a different vocal plane, I think. But what can I say? But you know, if you said to yourself, okay, the world's changing, along comes AI, and we haven't really talked about AI, but along comes AI now for your brands and all the rest of that.
Mm-hmm.
What are the specific sort of challenges that you see or your clients are telling you that they've sure. got that you're going to have to try and figure out? What are those things?
Yeah. So about 10 or 8 years ago, maybe a little longer, you know, Fiverr, Upwork, all of these, right, cheaper labor
yeah.
things came online. And our whole industry got really panties in a bunch about it. We're going to have so much cheap labor competition. And I wasn't affected by it. Why? Because I lead with strategy. Because the work being done, honestly, when we do the brands and the websites, by the time we show them the work, it's like, this is the obvious thing it should be. There's not a lot of back and forth. That's why we're able to do it in 2 days. To me, the AI thing is just an even faster, even cheaper version of that. And it means a lot of people who are just delivering the goods they are going to, the competition is very steep and they're probably going to go out of business. But anybody who can level up their communication skills, their leadership skills, their strategic thinking, and the way that they convey that strategic thinking to their clients so that they build trust, so that the client is bought into what they're saying and they can be led. Great, build the brand in 2 seconds with AI. That's not why they're hiring you. They're hiring you to for your discerning, curative taste. You need to curate and tell them which AI thing is right or wrong based on a strategy. So to me, it only means it's more important for us to build these skills and these processes, not less.
Wow. And that point, we have to draw things to a close because Kevin's got a hard stop. And to be honest with you, I've absolutely loved the conversation with you. You are such an engaging person. And fact that you come from New York's against you, but at the end of the day, you know that. a brilliant bartender, but better still, agency master. So Pia Silver, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the Next 100 Days podcast.
Gosh, Graham, I think we learnt an awful lot there. I think one of those things, it comes back to that old corporate escape story.
Yeah.
You were in corporate doing a job and nobody actually taught you how to run a business. And a lot of what Pia's doing is sorting that out with these small branding agencies.
Yeah, she's a very clever person and she's really done her stuff. And I think people will naturally gravitate towards her. And therefore, the work she creates on behalf and through her proteges, the work that they create for their clients is going to be that much better crafted. And it would be worth the money that they're likely to charge for it. So it's been a real lesson. There's a lot of little bits of lessons in what Pia has shared with us today. And we'd love to have her back at some stage because she's only going to go one way. And so today I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.